All right, let's call this meeting of the House Health and Social Service Committee to order. It is 3:06 p.m. on February the 14th, Valentine's Day, 2013. All right, present today is Representative Keller, Representative Tarr, Representative Reinbold, Representative Seaton, and myself, Representative Higgins. And we can eliminate this other one because you are here. It looks like we have a quorum. Good. So, I'd like to recognize Butch Carver as our House Recording Secretary, Betsy Dorn as our LIO moderator, and Paul Verhagen as my committee aide. People in the audience and committee members, if we could please disable our phones, put them in park or off so that they don't ring. If they do ring, you owe us donuts. That's right, people out there in the crowd. So, anyhow, let's try to do that. All right, today we have one bill, HB 44, Advanced Healthcare Directives Registry, sponsored by Representative Lindsey Holmes. Here to present the bill is Representative Holmes. So if Representative Holmes could come forward. Now, Representative Holmes has a concurrent meeting going on right now. So after she's done with her sponsor statements, we will excuse her, and she will turn the time over to her committee aide, I believe, right?
That is correct.
And so I'll let you introduce your committee aide and anybody else that will come and talk about the bill with you. So if you want, go right on ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Representative Lindsey Holmes, I represent House District 19. And thank you very much. I apologize in advance that I have an overlapping meeting down the hall. I am at the committee's discretion, though. I will stay as long as you would like me. But I have with me to my right Grace Abbott from my office, who is fully up to speed on the bill and should be able to help you through it. The bill in front of you, I want to thank the committee for hearing this. This is House Bill 44, an act relating to Registry for Advanced Healthcare Directives. Now, Advanced Healthcare Directives is not a term that most people are familiar with. The term that most people would understand would be living wills. An advanced healthcare directive is basically, it allows for power of attorney, describes a person's healthcare wishes. In the event that somebody is incapacitated and unable to make their own decisions, this lays out what care they do and don't want to receive and who is authorized to make decisions for them. These are obviously hard times for families when these things are going through. These advanced healthcare directives already exist in statute. We're not creating any new kind of authority. What this simply does is create a voluntary registry. It enables the Department of Health and Social Services to create a voluntary registry so that people who would like to in the state can submit this living will to the department. The department will basically scan it, put it into a confidential and secure database, and put it up on the internet so that hospitals and other healthcare facilities within the state will have access to it. This is an example. I mean, I have a living will. I will be honest, my living will, I'm pretty sure, is locked in the safe in my father's basement. I'm not sure my father knows that. and if something were to happen, I were to be, say, rushed to Bartlett Hospital for some unknown reason, it's not clear that the hospital would know who to contact. It's not sure that they would know what wishes I might have. And so in this case, what this would allow them to do is when I came in as a patient, the hospital could look it up online and say, oh, Lindsey Holmes, she has an advanced healthcare directive. Here's what it is. Here's the person who is enabled to make decisions if she can't. And here are the kinds of healthcare wishes she has. So in a nutshell, that is basically what this bill does. And with your permission, unless there are questions, I will turn it over to Grace Abbott to walk you through in more detail.
Well, I do have one question, maybe before you leave, anyhow. What's the fiscal note on this? I guess because you have to create some software for this, right, to do this?
Yes, we do. And we have people from the Department of Health and Social Services who put together the fiscal note who can help walk you through the specifics of it. What we are looking at, we've worked with the department off and on over the years on how to make this as fiscally responsible as possible.
Right.
So originally, people had been talking about having something where we'd actually create a database, which of course would involve a whole lot of typing things in. We said, no. We want this to be as easy. So basically, we enable them to just scan these things and put them up. They're also looking with some companies from outside the state who already have this kind of software that might make it more economical than us recreating the wheel. So there are some upfront costs and then some ongoing costs that reduce over time. And Grace Abbott, I think, has the fiscal note in front of her.
Okay. Exactly. For the record, my name is Grace Abbott, staff to Representative Holmes. Through the chair, in terms of our fiscal note, what we're looking at is like Representative Holmes stated, costs that initially reflect the setup and maintenance of the registry, as well as a full-time employee to make sure that regulations are in place to establish confidentiality, as well as methods which we can use to identify both hospitals as well as individuals and their guardians or surrogates so that they can have access to the registry. As time goes on, as the registry is set up and those regulations are in place, we expect that the full-time employee will decrease to a part-time employee who will run a toll-free number and make sure that that directives are placed on the registry in a timely manner or removed from the registry in a timely manner. And we have Joel Lewis here from the Department of Health and Social Services who can speak more to the specifics of this fiscal note as well.
Good. Representative Steen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In line 12, page 2, we're talking about an agent. How is an agent that can receive the state can release to an agent? What is the meaning of an agent? And how do you determine who's an agent of the individual who made a directive?
Through the chair, Representative Seaton, an agent, a guardian, or a surrogate for the individual who files that directive is designated within the person's own directive. So that basically is your durable power of attorney. If I decide that Representative Holmes is who I would like to have making my medical wishes known in the case that I am incapacitated, she would then fill the role as my agent, my guardian, or my surrogate.
Thank you, Ms. Chair.
Are there any other questions for Representative Holmes? If you feel comfortable, you can head on to your other committee if you'd like.
Mr. Chairman, I appreciate it. I will just be down the hall, I know you were very good hands with Grace here, and the fact that she just used me as her example of who she might want to be making these decisions for, I feel a great level of trust. If you need me, I'll be just down the hall.
Okay.
Thank
good.
You.
If we run into trouble, we'll grab you.
I think you're in good hands.
Through the chair, with your permission, I would like to run through the sections and subsections of this bill.
You bet.
Starting with Section 1, what we initially designate is that a healthcare facility or hospital is not liable for either accessing or not accessing the registry. Basically, what we want to have happen is we don't want anyone to be punished if they fail to look at the registry or they choose to look at the registry. Moving on to Section 2, which is the real meat of the bill, this is the primary authorizing section for the directive registry. Starting off with subsection A, this directs the Department of Health and Social Services to be the agency which will create and maintain the registry. It also establishes that the registry at this point will contain solely the names of an individual who may have filed a directive, as well as an electronic copy of this directive. Subsection B establishes that the Advanced Healthcare Directive Registry and participation in it is completely voluntary, which we establish through the term may. Subsection C is one of our first iterations that this registry is confidential. We want to make sure that although I may want my doctor or my guardian to be able to access my directive, I don't necessarily want that available to everyone. We make it clear to the department that the people who can, or the entities that can receive a copy of a person's directive are the individual who created the directive primarily, their guardian or other agent who they may designate, or a hospital in the state where at which the individual is a patient. So it's not just all hospitals. It's solely hospitals or healthcare facilities at which the individual is a patient. It additionally allows the department to provide a copy of the directive to a hospital outside of the state if the directive is requested by said individual or their guardian agent or surrogate. Subsection D directs the department to make the registry viewable online to hospitals in the state in the case of an emergency. Subsection E clarifies that the department will not be responsible for reviewing the legal validity of the directive. They are simply responsible for making sure that the directive is available and accessible on the registry. Subsection F allows that the individual can remove their directive from the registry at any point. This sort of builds on the idea that the directive is completely voluntary. So you can choose to participate in it, but at any given time, you can also choose to not participate in the registry.
I do have a question.
Absolutely.
And I'm not sure if you know the answer to this or not.
Okay.
Maybe it will require an attorney, but if you have your living will on the registry and something, you know, God forbid, happens, and you have family members or whatever, what supersedes the will? Is the will superseding the husband, you know, that's there?
At this point, what an advanced health care directive on the registry would serve to do is simply provide more information as to whether or not it would supersede any authority. Doctors already have regulations in place to establish what kind of authority they would accept in these situations. Right. Primarily, what we don't want to get in the way of is immediacy of care. If someone needs to be operated on in 5 minutes' time and their husband is in the room, obviously those decisions immediately go to the husband, and we don't want doctors to take time in a very time-sensitive situation to go and check a registry. However, in the case that there is more time, we want to make it available to add information and to provide doctors with a more complete view of a person's medical wishes.
Okay. Go ahead.
All right.
Yeah. Representative Keller.
I was just wondering, Grace, I may have drifted. Did you get down to the part where the hospital has access to the? I was reading ahead, maybe page 2, line 23.
Yeah.
Yeah. What did you anticipate there as far as who from the hospital would call and how that would work with confidentiality? Just what the thought is there.
Through the chair, Representative Keller, what we anticipate is that it is most likely the doctor who will be accessing the registry. However, we didn't want to limit it to just the doctor in case the administrative practices within the hospital requires a nurse to look up that information.
Go ahead.
Moving on to subsection H. Subsection H allows the department to charge a small fee that would only be up to the amount of their administrative costs. It would not be able to exceed that. We also give the permission to the department in this section, subsection, to not charge a fee if that is their wish for filing a directive on the registry. They are, however, not permitted to charge a fee for the removal of a directive. Subsection I is the authorizing language that we're giving to the department to make regulations to ensure that anyone who wishes to access the registry is allowed to have access. So basically, we're giving the department the ability to require whatever means works best for them to establish someone's identity, whether that be a login or password or a social security number. We leave that up to the department. Part of that depends on the cybersecurity aspect. Since technology is constantly changing, we believe that the department will be more flexible to make those changes as opposed to coming back to the legislature to authorize that. If subsection I refers to the cybersecurity aspect, then subsection J refers to the human security aspect. So if I were to call in to the registry to access my own directive or the directive of someone for whom I am their guardian, the department will be responsible for coming up with regulations to establish that identity as well. And like I said before, we want the department to come up with whatever works best for them, as well as whatever makes the most sense for the registry that we contract through. Subsection K, similar to Section 1 of this bill, protects the department and its employees from any sort of legal liability in regards to the operation of the registry. And lastly, subsection I provides definitions for text within the bill. When we refer to directive, we are referring to an advanced healthcare directive. And when we refer to registry, we are referring to the advanced healthcare directive registry.
Go ahead, Representative Seaton.
I'll try this again. In the definition of directive, you have it's written. As we know, our technology is changing all the time. This means, as I see it, the only way it can be accepted for the registry is if it's in a written directive. And if we advance directives in the future, they wouldn't apply to the registry unless we go back and change the law. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Representative Seaton, what we mean by written directive, since directives within the registry would be, well, they would be electronic copies. They would be scanned from the original written advanced healthcare directive, which is the only way in which a statute at this point allows us to submit a directive, is if it is filled out in a written manner. So I definitely see your point, but I think that since the directive will be written, and since there are no updates that a person can make to it electronically without having to resubmit and scan another copy to the registry, my hope is that we would not have to change that unless we find a way to come up with an advanced healthcare directive that is somehow written online. But as it is in statute, at this point, the only way that we can accept advanced healthcare directives are if they're in fact written.
You said we have the department here today, right?
Absolutely, Mr.
Is there any more questions for?
I have questions.
Oh, go ahead.
Okay. First of all, I'm going to start with I have three questions. I don't know if you want them all at the same time or individually. I guess I'll do them individually if the chair allows.
Go ahead.
Who initiated this idea? Was it physicians that initiated it? Was lawyers? I mean, I'm just trying to figure out where the concept came from.
Through the chair, Representative Reinbold. Interestingly enough, it was my boss, Representative Holmes, who came up with the idea, I suppose, although it is an idea that has existed in other states. During a dinner conversation, she heard about a friend who was in a situation in which a family member was incapacitated and they did not have access to their advanced health care directive. Through that, her concept was that having a way in which we could access it without having the physical copy on hand was where this reached a genesis.
Okay.
Go ahead, follow up.
Through the chair. The second question is, in about a dozen states that this is done in, on page, I guess this isn't paged, it's in your background.
Mm-hmm.
It shows that all of it is free. The only state that's a registration fee is $10. And on your page 3 of the actual bill, it says on line 3, so page 3, line 3, it says that the department may charge a fee. Is that the registration fee?
Through the chair, Representative Reinbold, it can be regarded as a registration fee. It would be the fee that would that the department would charge to file your advanced health care directive on the registry. In the past, we have seen that the vast majority of states do not charge a fee, and we also reflect that in our fiscal note, that the assumption at this point would be that we would not charge an administrative fee. However, we do give the department permission to charge a fee for filing the directive, but it would not be able to exceed the amount that it would actually cost to put that directive on.
And as a follow-up actually to that question, because the startup is about $25,000, the highest I see on here is one place in Montana for $100,000. For us, it's about $137,000, it looks like. And then our continued fees on the fiscal note are much higher. So, roughly, it's about double what it's costing in other states. And I guess I wanted an explanation for that?
Through the chair, Representative Reinbold, I think on that question I would defer to the department. They've done extensive research into the different venues available, the different contracts, or the different vendors that we can contract through. And so I think they would have a better sense for you of what the cost differential is and why we might be experiencing more in the state.
Okay, and then the third and final question through the chair.
Go ahead.
Is what do the physicians think about this? I mean, have any of the physicians been polled? Because I worked in the healthcare industry for quite a long time. You think they would kind of be a little nervous about this. So I just want to know. I've looked in the background data. I don't see any. I only see AARP, you know, as a basically, and then the Commission on Aging. I don't see any polling that's been done with the people that, is this a resource that they want? You know, they're the ones that are going to need this. So I just want to see what the medical community feels about this.
Through the chair, Representative Reinbold, I think that's an excellent question. We haven't received any pushback or any negative comments from the medical community. I think that seeing as advanced healthcare directives already exist and people who have them are already able to give them to a doctor, I don't believe that this would be adding any extra strain on them. I think, in fact, it provides them with more information, and that's sort of the anecdotal evidence we have received from the medical community, that the more information they have as to a person's medical wishes, the better they can treat them. And that's been the reaction that we've received thus far, but we can definitely look further into it as well.
Thank you.
Oh. Representative Seaton.
Try again here. On page 2, line 3, where it says an individual who has made a written directive for the individual. What individual is that talking about? Is that for another individual or for themselves?
Through the chair, Representative Seaton, this is a very complex and legal way of saying that an individual who, the text is that an individual who has made a written directive for the individual may file the directive with the registry, and that refers to the person who is writing their directive for themselves. And you'll see through the rest of the text of the bill that when we refer to the person who has written the directive for themselves, we are referring to them as the individual.
Follow up?
Well, does that mean the agent or couldn't submit it? That's only the individual that wrote it for themselves has to make the submission. Their agent would not be able to put it on the registry.
Through the chair, Representative Seaton, yes, the only way that we are acknowledging that a person can file their directive with the registry is in fact by themselves. While they can receive the assistance of others in filling out a directive, they would be filing it through mail, fax, or electronically themselves.
Good. Any more questions? Well, I guess I would like to talk to the department, so if you can invite them forward.
Absolutely.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Mrs. Abbott, you can stay up front with her.
Thank you.
So we might have more questions for you, too.
Absolutely. Hi, good afternoon. For the record, I'm Jill Lewis. I'm Deputy Director for the Division of Public Health.
Okay. Mrs. Lewis, one of the questions I've got is what's been brought up before, and that was the department may charge a fee. Now, history has always shown me that whenever time I leave an open-ended statement like that, I'm always afraid of it because I don't know what you're going to charge. And that, what is your ideas on that?
Well, the bill limits what we could possibly charge to cover our administrative costs. So it could only cover the amount of what it costs, say, in the fiscal note, what we reflect in the fiscal note. That would be the very top amount we may charge as maximum. What we're currently thinking, however, is to follow the trend that other states have, which is to not charge at all. And that is currently what is reflected in the fiscal note, no revenues collected at all. We believe that charging a fee would probably reduce participation.
Well, so do I. I would agree with that. I was just looking at the fiscal note, and you're saying it's not in the fiscal note as far as charging a fee.
would that be?
Mr. Chair, that is correct.
It's not in there.
No, we do not reflect fee. Our fee would be zero, no fee.
Well, that's my point, though. It's nowhere written about that. I mean, you're saying that, but it's not in writing that we're not going to charge anything. And the thing about document fees, leaving it up to the physician, I've, and I may be incorrect on this, but, you know, I'm in the health profession, and when somebody wants their records, it's up to me whether I want to charge a fee or not, and I could charge up to $300 for someone's records. And so that's the number that's out there. So that's why I'm saying, you know, technically you guys could charge $300 to register somebody if you wanted to. So I don't know, I'm a little leery about the department may charge a fee, but yet there's nothing in writing to make sure that you just don't go crazy on me and charge $300.
Mr. Chairman, if I could direct you to the page 2 of the fiscal note in the narrative section.
Right there.
In the first paragraph, at the end of the first paragraph, the last two sentences, a fee might offset administrative costs but would likely reduce participation. This fiscal note assumes there will be no fee.
Yeah, I just don't feel comfortable with assumes. Mm-hmm. That's anyways, that's my analysis of that. I'd like to see something a little different about that. I mean, if our intent is not to, then we should put in there not to. That's where I'm at. Second question I've got for you, you know, IT is just expensive. And you've got down here $137,000 to initiate this program. What happens if we can't initiate it for $137,000? Then what do we do next? I mean, are you pretty positive this can be initiated for $137,000? I mean, hands down, we can do this?
Mr. Chair, I would say yes, we are pretty certain. We have done some research. We initially did look into, as Representative Holmes mentioned, we looked into building it ourselves and found that that was probably going to be quite expensive, and alternatively found that there are some national registries that already exist for a much more reasonable cost. Our fiscal note is based on telephone conversations that we have had with one of those registries, and we have used their cost structure to make our estimates for what this bill would be.
Well, I got one more, and that is, okay, if I did wanted to register my living will with you, how would I do that? Would it go through an attorney so it's legal, or could I just do it at home and scan it on in? How is it going to be actually implemented?
Through the chair, the Advanced Healthcare Directive would be submitted to the Department of Health and Social Services by the individual themselves. They could definitely seek the advice of an attorney. However, an Advanced Healthcare Directive, as we within the registry, as we stated in the text of the bill, will not be confirmed to be legally valid by simply being on the registry.
Okay. Representative Kelly?
Yeah, if I could, I've got a couple questions. One is, and other states that have done this, how many people have that are voluntary? I mean, what percentage of the population has stepped forth and used the program, and have you, what's the word, you know, the word isn't coming to me, but have you, pardon?
Participation.
Well, have you put it down to, made it comparable to Alaska, how many do you anticipate to, maybe it's in your fiscal notes and I didn't want it on the record, but go ahead.
Through the chair to Representative Keller, that is a very good question. We have looked at what other states have done and how much of a participation rate they have had. We have used that and estimate that based on our population and other states' experience, we might expect maybe 1,000 users. However, we have some anecdotal information that Providence Hospital in Anchorage has on file 1,000 themselves just at Providence. And based on the amount of the population that they serve, then that means if that held true statewide, then that ratio might make as many as 4,000. So our estimates are 1,000 to 4,000, and I know that's a big swing, okay? But the fee structure for the example registry that we have talked to is a minimum of 5,000 users for a flat rate, which in so it doesn't any of those estimates at this point don't exceed what the flat rate would be.
And
follow up.
Go ahead.
Oh, and if I may, through the chair, Representative Keller, part of our fiscal note also assumes that we would be spending some money on outreach to the community in terms of attempting to encourage participation. So while our initial estimate, you know, maybe 1,000 users, we also hope that through outreach we are able to encourage more folks to put their to make an advanced healthcare directive and to put it on a registry.
So part of the fiscal note is for outreach, or I mean, I'm sorry, I haven't read the details of that. My follow-up, a follow-up, I have two actually. And one of them is in other states. You said that Providence has their own database. In other states, has the private sector stepped forward with available databases? Like, I am not a patient at Providence, but I wonder if I couldn't register there in anticipation that I might end up there or something, you know. I was just wondering if the private sector has stepped up anyway on this kind of thing.
Through the chair to Representative Keller, I don't have that information about hospitals' practices.
Another thought, and the last follow-up, if I could, is, you know, things move so fast on this whole electronic world, technology changes, and I'm hearing rumors of apps, for example, for an iPad that keep your medical records, you know, and so you have your own personal, pull out the phone. And I'm just wondering if any states, you know, or you've heard of anything out there, either from public health or maybe Grace in your research. I mean, are there other options besides a publicly run registry that we have to pay for forever and ever and keep confidential and all these things, you know, tied to it? I'm just wondering what the options are out there.
Through the chair, Representative Keller, while I do know of individual hospitals that have created their own registry, for the most part, if you are not a patient at that hospital at the time of an emergency, your advanced health care directive would not be accessible to you. If, say, I'm in a car crash here at Bartlett Hospital and my directive is registered at Providence, Bartlett has no way of accessing or knowing that I have a directive filed with Providence. In terms of your question about apps and other sort of mobile availability of medical records, while I definitely think that that could be a burgeoning field, a lot of individuals who have advanced healthcare directives are probably not the iPad's target demographic. A lot are older or not as familiar with technology, and relying on that option alone may not be as accessible for the general population.
Mr. Chair, if I could follow up with
that. Go ahead.
One trend that some of the states seem to be moving towards is aligning what they have for advanced care directives with their state health information exchange, electronic health record incentive payments that you can receive for participating in the health information exchange. Are in stages, and some of them are mandatory things and optional things, and taking in an electronic version and storing it of an advanced healthcare directive is one of the optional qualifying conditions to receive these kinds of incentive payments for providers, and I think that's why some states are moving in that direction. I believe Virginia recently announced that they were doing that.
If I could indulge one more. Actually, Jill's comment brought it up. I just wanted to clarify and put on the record that the health information exchange is not the same as a health exchange. The health information exchange is a database for sharing medical records between providers, and we have spent a significant amount of money on encouraging health information exchange in the state of Alaska. And so this is an option, you know, for that program. It's still in the formative stages.
Representative Tark.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for the department. On the fiscal note, I, you know, see going out to FY 15, 202. So if you only had 1,000 participants and you have statutory authority to charge the cost of that program, you know, going from FY15 to FY19, we'd be looking at a cost of $82 to $200 to support that, which is not in line with the other states where most are free or only charge $10. So I'm just wondering if you could respond to that and then give me a little, pardon me, a little bit of information about the significant change in services, what that line would mean. So FY14 would be, you know, just 10 going up 80 and then kind of leveling off, but just unclear in the description, second page of the fiscal note, what that component is.
Thank you, through the chair. Representative Tarr, let me I'll address the first question about the potential maximum fee. You are interpreting what the potential fee could be correctly, that it would cover our costs, and if there were only 1,000, there's 200,000 maximum cost, which eventually ramps down to about 80,000, 82 on the fiscal note. And so at 1,000, yes, that would be a much higher individual cost. If there were 4,000 participants, of course, that cost would come down. I think that in looking to what other states have done, with those mostly being free, but even the ones that do charge have only charged a very nominal amount, I think that that is something that, you know, we would look to as the direction that if we went with a fee, I don't think we would really try to recover the full cost unless that was the will of the legislature.
A follow-up then, Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead.
It feels like that might be, the language could be more specific to that in terms of a limit on the fee, because I could see the potential for limited opportunity for GF support of this, and then because the statutory language allows for the program to be paid for with the fee and there's no limit there, you know, it seems like it might limit the success of this effort if the fee got to be even $50, $100 might be a deterrent if we're talking about older folks who may not feel like there's much value in, you know, paying an additional expense. Just a thought.
Representative Bramble?
Thank you. And I'm going to revert back to the question I asked earlier now that the department is in front of us. I see that in other states, there's no cost, as many of us have stated. And if you look at what you're charging the physician, it's $112,000 is what it looks like you budgeted out for the physician, plus an $11,000 travel budget. So if you divide that by the number of estimated users, I mean, that's about $1,000 per user, I mean, if you divide it out that way, which is very alarming because we have very tough budget decisions that we're making right now. We get requests every day. So, it you know, and we have to shrink our budget, you know, if we want it sustainable, is my personal opinion. But I guess what my question to you is, if Virginia has this program, because I think the concept is worthy of discussion, but if Virginia has done this at no operational costs since 2008 with a program called Unival, and it's free to the residents, I'm not sure why we're not modeling ours after that. And maybe you've done some research in regards to that, where that's a specialized program for Virginia. I'm not sure. But it is worthy of looking into the Virginia program to see if we can do this, if there's the need and the support from the physicians and patients, and after better, a much better fiscal model.
And through the chair, Representative Reinbold, as I understand it, and I might not be understanding it correctly, but as I understand Virginia's situation, much of their participation happened organically through their hospitals aligning and creating a healthcare information exchange. Since we don't have that occurring in Alaska, our hope was that this registry would be able to create that.
Representative Seen, you have a question?
Try again here. It says in here on page 2, line 7, that you can release through mail, facsimile, or internet access, but there's nowhere that it says that it can be submitted to the department by those. Oftentimes, you may be talking about a senior and their spouse or other one, but what we've got is here that the online 3 is it's only the individual whose directive it is that can file that. And so I don't understand the reason if those people that are an agent will be able to get access and get a copy of the directive, why is it they can't file the certified copy with the department or hand it in or whatever?
Through the chair, Representative Seaton, as I understand it, the only as statute already describes, the only person that may fill out their advanced health care directive is the individual themselves, which in our minds led us to believe that the intent of the advanced health care directive, as we extend it to a registry, would be that only the person themselves can submit it. They can receive assistance in mailing it and in faxing it or sending it electronically to the department. However, as I understand it, the person themselves has to be the one to submit it. But they can receive assistance.
Mr. Chair, yeah, if I could follow up with that. One of the purposes of having a dedicated position full-time, particularly in the first couple of years, part of the outreach is to work with folks who would be likely to be interested in this and maybe go around to seniors, centers, or hospitals and explain this. And it is also to operate a telephone toll-free line for technical assistance. And we anticipate that we would receive by mail paper directives, which we will be scanning into the system on behalf of the individuals. And then part of what we have to do in regulation is figure out how we will maintain the security of the paper document and destroy it. And we will be doing that following the HIPAA laws, the privacy laws that are federal and state that apply to us.
Mr. Chairman, I'm confused because if someone goes to the hospital and the agent or surrogate brings in the health care directive, it's fully accepted. And here we're putting this additional barrier for filing with the registry. What a person can fill out at home, have witnesses sign and take in. So I'm uncomfortable putting an additional barrier to that. So anyway, we'll look at the amendments.
And if I may, through the chair, Representative Seaton, our hope is that by requiring the individual themselves to send in their own directive, that we are able to establish that it is not falsified, basically.
You know, I'm looking at your numbers here on your fiscal note on page 2, and, you know, you've got down here that your model is modeled after Anchorage, okay, and basically saying, you know, if Providence does half the population and they have, 1,000 directives, then the registry database could include 4,000 if that level of volume is held true statewide. Well, Fairbanks proper, at its best, is 120,000. Half of that, you know, is going to be 50,000, which now means you're looking no better than 500 out of Fairbanks. And we're the second largest city. Start adding Juneau. I mean, you're never going to get 4,000 directives at that model that you just produced. So unless you literally go out and try to get people to do it, okay? I'm just a little leery on the numbers that you presented. And you know, how it's supposed to try to self-pay or be revenue neutral to a degree. I can see where we could run into a problem with that. And what I've seen with other programs is that it's a good idea, and I think the concept's a good idea. All right, how do we get it done is another story. Because I've seen other programs have started, and we found out down the road we need more money to make it happen. And then it just never ends, more and more and more money. So I've got some reservations about that. Okay. Are there any other questions for? Good. Thanks for sitting in the hot seat.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Well, at this time, then, why don't we open it up to public testimony? And so I'll open up public testimony. Let's try to limit our testimony to 3 minutes per person. Is there anybody in the audience that would like to testify?
Yep.
Yep.
I signed the sheet.
I don't have the sheet. Come on up.
My name is Marie Darlin, and I represent the Legislative Task Force of AARP. And you do have in your booklet, you should have our letter of support. And so we just want to say that we do support this. And I might remind you and you, it took us 4 years to get the advanced directives actually passed through the legislature to begin with. And now we see this as really another step, you know, to making this complete as to what you can do with them and how to use them and make them really worth something. And this we see as the next step. And all of these kinds of things are good for many reasons. It does, by virtue of asking that people get their advanced directives done, and I really would encourage each one of you, get a copy. If you haven't already done it, get a copy of the advanced directives, and you will see. You appoint an agent. You have to have your signature notarized. Many of the questions that you've asked are already taken care of on the advanced directive itself. And so we would see organizations like ours, like AARP, and then helping to spread the word that there is a registry if you wish to take part in it. And according to what the bill says, it should be a nominal fee, we hope. But again, we know how some of those things go. But nevertheless, we've been assured that they will do their very best that they can so that it will not be an expensive kind of issue for our elderly people. And we will spend our efforts, which, you know, we have something like the letter says 94, but the last I heard was 95,000 members in Alaska. But we have, you know, the means to spread the word, encourage them to get their directives done. The biggest part about that and the most important part about it is that it actually means you sit down and discuss this. Talk about what your, you know, what your wants would be if the situation's got to that point. You appoint who your agent is going to be and those kinds of things so that it's not one of these things where you get to the last minute, nobody knows anything. What do you want? You know, who do we call? Anything like that. This registry would give them a little better options, particularly if, say, you're not in your hometown, you're maybe even stateside. And we've had some people we talked with who actually had registered theirs with, like, our hospital here and had made the call back from down south to the hospital to find out just exactly what those directives said. And so you never know what the situation is going to be where you're going to want this information, or it'll be helpful in some way. So with that, we just want to say that we support this and hope that last session didn't make it, but maybe this time it will. Okay. And that's all I have to offer.
Thank you for your help. Representative Tarr.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Marie. I'm just curious, do you think that the membership of your organization is aware of just the opportunity to file a directive separate from this idea of the electronic registry? Because I almost see the registry as something that someone my age might use more. Just having gone through this with my grandma a couple of weeks ago, she certainly was never going to use a computer. So I'm just wondering if, you know, we would need to focus efforts on that first piece a little bit more.
Well, we are continuing to. I mean, we have since the very beginning when we started working on having a advanced directive, because there were several different kinds that were available if you wanted to use them, or you could just write out your own. But this was with the idea that there is one now within statute which says this is what an advance directive is. And we have done our very best to educate as many people as we can and do all the time. If you watch the AARP deals on 360 North, which are every week, and there's always a topic every so often in there on advance directives and, you know, the need and why it's important. But again, coming back to the fact that it does then require some kind of a family discussion, which many times does not get done.
Mr. Chairman?
Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So are you, I guess the anecdotal information we have is that Providence has 1,000 on file. We're not aware of the numbers, you know, but the chairman referenced the idea, kind of looking at population size. Are you surprised then at the small number of people who have chosen to take that step? If you have 95,000 members in the state, and have been doing this outreach on that, you know, that encouraging doing a directive, that more people haven't taken it, or is it just catching on?
Well, you know, it would be interesting to know how many people actually do have them, but that's very hard to get that figure. You wouldn't know, and if, well, the registry would be one way to find out a little bit about that information, how many people actually have their advanced directives. And so there are always going to be those kinds of, you know, ifs and numbers that maybe you can't nail down to where you have something specific. But again, it's like so many other things, it's just an education project, really, ongoing, and trying to get people to take part in it. And then we have heard quite a few comments about the registry, that they feel it's important. And as I say, a couple people that I know have used, you know, this from stateside, even having to come back to wherever they would have had it registered, possibly, you know, in a hospital or something. But the problem is the hospitals, at least other than Providence, because they have quite a wide network now, are really not doing anything. They do not file them. They did to begin with, but they don't anymore. You have to have it yourself.
Okay. I appreciate you bringing that up, because that was going to be my last question, if they're not with the hospital. So some people, imagine, are keeping it in their personal.
Well, they do. And well, I can give you an example. My daughter fell right before Christmas and broke her shoulder. Had to go south then. Could have had it done here, but they recommended that, looking at it, maybe she should go south. So she went down to Washington State, to Spokane, because her son lives in Coeur d'Alene. And she took with her advanced directives. And the hospital there, of course, asked for it, which she had. But if things happen where you don't have it on you, and yet we try to tell people, if you're going to travel, take your advance directives with you. So it's just a situation of trying to educate people that they are important.
Thank you, Marie. Is there any other questions for? Okay. Thank you, Marie, for your testimony. We appreciate it. Are there anybody else out in the audience that would like to give testimony at this time? Okay, great. I think we have somebody online. Jeffrey Mittman, are you on?
I am, Mr. Chair.
You have the floor.
Thank you. This is Jeffrey Mittman of the ACLU of Alaska, and we will keep well within the three-minute limit. We want to thank the committee for its consideration and have submitted our letter of support. We think this proposition is an excellent balance of the state providing a mechanism for individuals in the state of Alaska to voluntarily be part of a scheme that improves the provision of health care while recognizing the need for medical decisions to be made between the patient and his or her health care provider. We think it's an excellent bill and support it.
Thank you. Well, if I don't see anybody else with online, we appreciate your testimony. At this time, then, I think what I'll do is I will leave public testimony open, because we're going to probably revisit this bill. at a later date. So let's do that. And we'll put it aside. Okay? All right. Well, in that case, then, our next HESS meeting committee will be at 3 p.m. on Tuesday, February the 19th. We don't have a bill to hear on Tuesday, but we do have two presentations scheduled. So let's all be here on time so we can get done early. There will be Tribal Behavioral Health Directors Committee, and the other one is the Alaska State Hospital and Nursing Homes Association. It is now 4:05, and we are adjourned.